outline the case for how small businesses are going to be affected by sequestration and why you say that it will hurt small businesses more so than the large companies.
Well, we tend to hear from the most vocal leaders of defense and aerospace industries, including the prime contractor leaderships, the companies like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, and others. But the reality is that for every dollar that Congress appropriates to a program that goes to a prime contractor, roughly 70 to 75 cents of that dollar goes out the door of the big company to small and medium-sized businesses across America. And some of these are, you know, small businesses under 100 people, but a lot of them are medium-sized companies, 500 or less. And they are the suppliers and the vendors and the sub-vendors and the long lead suppliers for a lot of these major contractors. In some cases, these small businesses are the only company in the country doing that type of work.
I wonder, though, if the approach that sequestration will hurt business overall might not be the wrong symptom to address. And maybe the symptom is if 70% of the money goes immediately out the door to the small businesses, maybe the symptom that we should be addressing is how can it be easier for small businesses to do business directly with DOD?
I think that is a very fair point. And this is something that has been a concern of, I would argue, defense leadership of both parties the last several years and of Congress. You know, the defense acquisition cycle and process is so overwhelmingly huge and bureaucratic and cumbersome with red tape. And there's been a concerted effort at DOD and by Congress, again, to sort of take a more venture capitalist-like approach to cutting-edge technologies, for example, so that you and services as well, so that you can rope in smaller businesses more easily without having to go through all the standard hoop jumping of the GSA schedule and all the other things that are required. This is a lifetime process, however. It will never be perfect. I will say the rare time I'll give government credit is, you know, the effort to bring in more of these companies, these smaller companies, and minority-owned and women-owned and veteran-owned has been showing some effect of late. And so it's getting better, but it's something that's going to need to be fixed for as long as you and I keep talking.
You give an example of one of these companies in this piece you're writing. We have it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You give the example of the company JWF Industries in Western Pennsylvania. Talk about what they do and how this affects a company like them.
Sure. So, you know, the Army has a lot of different types of vehicles, and, you know, they each vehicle has many different suppliers, and this one particular company in Pennsylvania, their owner was on TV recently talking about, you know, being what it's like to be a first-tier subcontractor to a major prime contractor for DOD. And he basically said, you know, I have 450 families that work for me, and we are some of the first to get impacted by not just sequestration that's looming over Washington and the defense industry, but just defense budget cuts in general. So, you know, the Army is absorbing its own, you know, variant budget cuts under just the president's budget for this year and the debt ceiling deal of last year before sequester. And what he basically says is because we are one of those long lead suppliers, you know, the parts that we make go into the vehicle that takes maybe, say, 2 years until final production and assembly, and it rolls off the line and it's handed over to the Army. They need that much notice ahead of time to order and prepare all of the parts. And what they're saying is basically the defense budget cuts of the last 3 years are now being felt on small businesses like his, which makes perfect sense. And again, this is all pre-sequestration. If it takes anywhere from 1 to 3 years to build vehicles and aircraft, for example, ships tend to take a little longer, some of them, you can see why the lagging indicator is coming to fruition at companies like this, where the orders have slowed or stopped altogether. You'll remember the 2010 Obama-Gates defense budget killed 50 major weapons programs, but it canceled or shrunk a total of 240 big and small programs. Those effects are now being felt in our defense, shipbuilding, and aerospace industrial base across America right now. The challenge here is that if this is how they're coping with defense budget cuts that are underway as part of our build down after the war in Iraq, it's going to be a lot messier when sequestration hits, if it does. And of course, I hope that it doesn't.
Mackenzie Eaglin of the American Enterprise Institute is writing about how sequestration can affect small businesses, and we have the piece linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When you look at the top line, Mackenzie, if sequestration does happen, and I think a lot of people agree with you that it's probably not going to, that some solution will be found, but let's say that it does. The top line will still be about the same as it was in 2008, and I don't recall a whole lot of people running around Washington at the time. There were a few probably, but I don't remember a lot of people saying, this isn't nearly enough, we need to increase by 9 or 10% immediately. And that's the dynamic in reverse that I kind of see here, and that skeptics of the whole concept of cutting the budget are starting to talk more about.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. You know, I understand the putting the defense budget in context, and it always needs to be in context, especially in this town. But two things. The defense budget today doesn't buy what the defense budget even just 10 years ago bought. It's structured much differently, and definitely not 20 years ago. Today's defense budget, that's not war spending, 50% of it, entirely one half, goes to pay people or their benefits or in-kind compensation, something related to people. So the amount that we're spending on everything else, whether that's training or services or IT or commodities or procurement of weapon systems, is a smaller piece of the pie. And the one that we tend to focus on are the things where we can kick the tires, you know, weapons programs in particular. That's the account that's been whacked since President Obama came into office. I just referenced the 2010 defense budget, for example. And so it continues to take a hit. What that does is pressure the other account in the budget that maintains all of the older systems. As we buy fewer and fewer of the newer platforms, we're keeping older ones in service longer. But we're shrinking all of the budgets equally in the defense budget. So the account that's supposed to maintain these aging and creaking fleets, in many cases on the high-end ships, vehicles, and aircraft, that budget's shrinking too. And so what we're basically doing is prematurely retiring a lot of these assets that we actually need, because the op tempo hasn't slowed down for our force worldwide, even though Iraq's requirements have drawn down. That's point one. And quickly, point two is we also don't have a military today that it was in the last defense bill down in the 90s. It was a lot easier to draw down troops and equipment in the 90s because we had the Reagan buildup. We lived off the fruit of that capital for, frankly, until today. We've been living off of that. And we had a different economy in the 1990s for the people that we were letting go to be absorbed into. And so when you've taken what is largely a next generation procurement holiday for 20 years, it's a whole different drawdown. So yeah, going actually back to 2006 or 2008 numbers is problematic right now. And that's because the structural challenges underlying the entire defense budget aren't going away.
And when you talk about the incredible amount of money that personnel costs are soaking up, I immediately go back to Congress and think about the way that members just go ballistic anytime you propose any potential changes to the personnel cost structure. Because it inevitably means we're going to have to raise TRICARE premiums, we're going to have to expect members of the military to pay more for any number of different things, and that's just something that the members can't or won't stomach.
There's no doubt that Congress is just as much at fault for a lot of these structural imbalances in the defense budget, if not more so than any other party here. You know, the Joint Chiefs and the Secretary of both parties, like I've said, have been pushing for small and incremental and manageable changes right now on the personnel front. And part of it isn't even to go after the active duty or the Guard and Reserve guys right now. It's that in the next 5 years, the cost of our retired and veteran force will be greater than our active duty service members. We're at a tipping point now with personnel costs, and we need to start tackling and discussing, the retiree benefits, particularly those of working age who are healthy. That's really, you know, the issue here. And, dealing with that will then help us have a conversation about how we want to pay the future of volunteer force. You know, do we want a dual track system? Do we want to give retirement benefits to people who serve less than 20 years? A lot of people do, but you can't just pile on new benefits without tackling the whole system and figuring out how to make this more efficient, because if all things stay equal, by 2039, I think the estimate is the entire defense budget would just pay people if nothing else changed. So, you know, we do have to do something, and we need to have these honest, calm conversations about it that aren't emotional, but try to understand the unique needs to give those in uniform and those who serve the benefits and compensation that they deserve. We have to do it in a responsible way. And so Congress is the one who's not letting that conversation continue. It hits a dead wall every time. And this year in particular, because it's a presidential election year, which is unfortunate because I think there's an appetite to do something now, and they may lose this window of opportunity.